You're listening to a CNA podcast.
Hi everyone, we are back with another interesting topic. In fact, this topic was suggested by you guys, our listeners.
Yes.
So a few weeks ago, we talked about poor performers. Several people responded to say, can you also talk about bad managers? Turns out it's quite a common thing.
Hi folks, Crispina here. Yeah, you guys were really passionate about this topic and then you sent your comments and your bad experiences. We loved hearing from you, so we are definitely going to go through some of your comments. This is also a good point for us to stop and say that if you haven't already done so, please follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and talk to us there. Okay, now let's get to this. Adrian, I know you've had a few bad managers, but tell me, what's the worst manager you've had?
How much time do you have for me? Okay, one of the worst I've seen was a COO in an educational institute that I reported to. He ran meetings that run over days. Days.
No way. How can a meeting run over days?
It does. So you finish on that day, you continue tomorrow.
Oh.
And the longest meeting we ever had was 2.5 days. And I clearly remember after that meeting, one of the new sales director resigned because he couldn't take it anymore. Shortly, I also followed. What about you?
No, I really need to find out about this day-long meeting, right? So that means from 9 to 5, you guys are in a room?
We were in a room. There's no agenda. We were just talking about, oh, sales performance is bad. What should we do? And then he reprimanding other people. I have no idea what objective you're supposed to fulfill,
right.
But it happens to be a common thing because all the old guards just follow through.
Don't you guys have work to do?
We do. And that's the thing. Some of the sales director couldn't take it anymore because after 2.5 days of meeting, they couldn't go out and achieve their sales target. And next week, the COO would be like, how come you never hit your sales target?
And nobody said this to this guy?
Nobody said that to this guy.
Okay, this has to be a very Singaporean thing. Yes, you asked me, what about me, right? So actually, to be honest, I've been quite lucky. I've had generally good managers over the years that I've been working, but a couple I feel were not ideal. Ironically, both were female and they had some things in common. First, my overall sense was that they were insecure. So when bosses are insecure, they tend to protect their turf first instead of focusing on their people. The second thing is they had trouble controlling their emotions. So yelling was a thing. They would raise their voice, they would shout at people. And I was like, who shouts in this day and age, right? But everybody just adjusts around that and say, oh, that's how she is, lah. Don't ask so many questions. And in general, people under them felt that they were not very good at their job. So that's the third thing, right? The competency part. Yeah, so I'm sure there's a range, right?
Yep, there's a range for sure. And hopefully our guest today can unpack this for us. She is Audrey Low, a leadership coach and founder of a company called Designing Trust. Welcome to Work It, Audrey.
Hi.
Hi, Audrey.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with this quote from Forbes. It's often said that people quit bosses, not jobs. A bad boss can make a good job miserable and a bad job unbearable. Do you agree?
I would say generally, yes. It also depends on several other factors, like the season that you are in your career, the remuneration of the role, of course, the colleagues around. You may have fantastic colleagues.
Oh, yeah.
So it really depends, but a manager does play a significant role in how much you enjoy your time in that role or not.
Yeah. So people always say they quit bosses or they quit people, they don't quit jobs. I actually think that's quite simplistic also. I agree with Audrey. The job might be interesting enough. The bad boss might be on a scale. Okay, I would probably quit the guy who has two-day meetings.
I agree.
So before we dive into the horror story side, okay, so let's unpack what we mean by a bad manager in the first place, from your own experience. Share with us where you think someone clearly falls into bad territory, crosses the line into bad.
Maybe let's define it on a scale, maybe from 1 to 10, 10 being the best manager that we've ever had.
Yes.
Maybe now we're describing a manager in the realm of maybe 1 to 5.
Okay.
From my experience, a manager that is challenging to work with, sometimes they seem to be busy all the time, not able or willing to make time to listen and truly understand the challenges that we're facing. Secondly, unclear expectations or changing goals. So we say that we want one thing, we've achieved it, and next week it's, why didn't you achieve B?
Mm. But you said A.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on A.
And it's whether it's properly documented in black and white. Mm. So we can refer back to, in this meeting on Tuesday at 3 o'clock, we discussed this, I sent out a memo, you agreed. I asked if there's anything else to add. I didn't receive anything.
Okay.
So that's why I worked on that.
I think these are commonly known as roti prata leadership.
Yeah. Okay. The flip-flopping thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And sometimes it could be due to pressures from above that we may not see as well.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But sadly, what we see, it's all that we can see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep, yep.
So there's that communication that's needed as well.
Yeah. I raise the other stuff, right? Which is controlling emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So you think yelling is a red flag?
For sure. For sure. And that leads very nicely to the third point. Does not create sufficient trust and psychological safety within the team.
Okay.
Through three things: body language,
mm-hmm.
tone, choice of words.
Okay.
A lot of times, it's not what is said or not being said.
Yeah.
It's a tone of how it's said.
Could you give an example? So same message, but on different spectrum. How would it sound like?
For example, a leader was sharing suggestions in her opinion. So she was advising, but her people heard it as challenging and correcting because of the way that it was said. It was more direct. And from her years of experience, she was like, why is it being done like that? How about doing it this other way? And to the people who may not have worked with her that long, they heard it as, this is not good enough. This is not up to her expectations.
Okay. I think there are grey areas here.
Yeah.
So I could, for example, in a rush of time, tell somebody, can you just do this quickly?
Mm.
Is my tone okay?
Your tone is okay for people who knows you well, I guess.
So it boils back to trust as the foundation in relationships. If I had worked with you for 10 years already, and I know you, I know your heart, like we've seen each other through thick and thin, and you tell me, can you just do this quickly? I would understand where you're coming from and I'll just get it done.
It's like when I tell my wife she put on weight, because we know each other so well, she wouldn't be completely offended. But if someone on Instagram tell her that she put on weight, I think she probably would block that person for the rest of her life.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I think that relationship level is very important to begin with.
Yeah.
Sometimes when it sounds a little bit more curt or direct, probably I wouldn't read too much into it. But if I didn't really know you and I'm an intern working with you for the first time, and it's day two, I'm eager to please and prove myself, and you're like, can you just do it quickly? I might go, oh no, what did I do wrong? Am I too slow?
Yeah.
Am I underperforming? Am I not meeting expectations? And then all of this.
But surely that's overthinking, right? Okay, my caveat always is, in a fast-moving newsroom environment, I just don't have the time to explain. Or you think that managers should be able to just cope with whatever scenario, adjust to who they're talking to?
I think there's always benefits in just checking in. Was I clear? Is there anything else that you need from me?
Right.
Not just give the instruction and go and expect them to have figured it out.
Yeah. Especially if you are the one giving the instructions, or if you're the one asking someone to do something. I also feel that it goes both ways. It's not fair to just pin the blame on one person and say, it's your job to make sure this person understands. The other person has agency to say, wait a minute, do you want me to do this?
There's actually six aspects to a good request.
Mm.
And in work, it's constantly about making requests and then saying, okay, I've made a promise, and keeping promises, and that's how work gets done.
Yeah.
And so it's about ensuring that there's an active speaker, an active listener, making sure that we are at the appropriate environment to connect, and we're really having an active listener. What is the context? What is the time? ASAP is not really a good request, because that can mean different things for different people. Yep. It's kinder to say, I need it by 2 p.m. And if someone can't deliver, we negotiate. The mood in which it's being asked, which links to tone. And finally, conditions of satisfaction. Is it aligned? If it is not aligned, what can we do to ensure that it at least overlaps?
Not aligned meaning what I'm asking and what can be delivered is not aligned.
Yes, yes. And that can be a competency issue. That can be an experience issue.
Yeah, yeah. Because outcomes are there. I can't change the outcomes. Outcomes are fixed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? So the pace links to outcome. So what you're saying is, talk about the disconnect.
Mm-hmm. I love the word tension. So in relationships and communication, where there is tension, we tend to shy away from it.
Yeah.
But there's so much benefits in leaning into it, because that's usually a signal or a flag that, hey, maybe there's something about trust that we can look into mending or strengthening.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the general thing people do in my experience is that they just lie low and live longer.
Okay, let's dive into some advice you can give to our listeners. Here's one comment that was sent to us from Richie Mori, who said, how can employers deal with micromanaging poor managers? So micromanagement comes out a lot. It's a killer trait, but so many people have this trait. What exactly is it? Why is it toxic? And importantly, what's your advice on dealing with such micromanagers?
We cannot control how others behave. We cannot control how micromanagers behave, but we can influence others through our behaviors, our words, our narratives, and how we show up. So if we are feeling suffocated by a manager that we perceive is micromanaging us, how can we then give them the assurance that they need, that everything's on track, we know what we're doing, to double check, do you care about how it is done? Or do you trust me that as long as I got the brief, I have some room to execute it in a way that I know how or I think is best? So it's about, again, asking those questions. Do you want me to do it your way, step 1 to 10? And we get to step 10. Or are you okay with me doing 1, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and still get to the same outcome? Another aspect about managing micromanagers is to understand what matters to them.
Give me an example of somebody who has micromanaged you before.
I have worked with someone who was quite particular about how things are done, even in meetings.
Okay.
And how notes were taken. And I was fortunate enough to have some healthy level of trust with this manager.
Yeah.
In the end, we managed to hit our objectives. And when we were tight on time, usually because a few people took a little longer, I was not shy to just cut in and say, we have 5 minutes left. Can we start to wrap up? So I think just focusing on the task, like serving the work and let the work serve people, helped.
Yeah. But you were lucky because you had somebody who you could work with, right? Most micromanagers don't really want to change. I mean, that's who they are. Adrian,
do you have a certain level example? I personally have not been micromanaged before, but I've worked in an environment where there is a micromanager, and I constantly hear stories of how she would go to the extent of go and English teacher your email before you send it out. Oh, here, you got to change this, you got to change this wording. To the extent, I think it's bordering OCD kind of stuff. So that may be a bit hard to resolve if that's the case. But I do understand where Audrey is coming from, because if you're able to observe the nitpicking, so to speak, that this person constantly have, then you upfront let her know or upfront let him know.
Again, I live in the grey areas because I think in reality, nothing is ever so neat. There are some people who care so much about the work, every little thing matters. To your example about the email, right? I would say I'm quite particular about emails. I don't know why. When somebody sends me an email with lots of grammar errors or the font is different or whatever, I tend to want to fix that, right? Because sending emails is part and parcel of how people perceive our requests. But you know it when somebody doesn't trust you and says, I need to know how you arrived at this. Where did you get this from? Like, what kind of clothes are you going to wear? I don't know. That's so weird stuff.
Are we color coordinated for today's podcast recording, for example?
When you run an event, right? Right down to the, did you lift the carpet up and check that there's dirt? That's what I mean. And so you as manager, Adrian, if you're coming to check all my line items, that's a lot of waste of your time, right?
Yes. It is. So the same COO that I mentioned earlier on, he also has this habit of stamping every single certificate that goes out to students. But from my perspective, it's like, why are you wasting your time on this? You should be improving the efficiency, the process. But somehow they are just so fixated on looking at the most menial task to work on that to them, yes, it's enjoyable, but actually doesn't benefit the business at all.
Right.
So I guess even to that micromanager, if it's just a one-off thing as a coaching session, as a way to teach you how to do it better, it makes sense. But every time I have to jump in, every time I have to take a red pen, oh, this one wrong, this one wrong, this one wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe she can excel being a MOE teacher.
And to Crispina's point, yes, definitely if we are working with someone who is micromanaging us, it can be quite disempowering. It can be quite discouraging and demotivating.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of autonomy or even room for creativity.
Exactly.
And it really then feels like my manager doesn't trust me.
Correct.
For whatever reasons. Does she think that I am not competent enough in terms of the hard skills? Or does she think that I'm not reliable enough? And sometimes the issue of reliability comes up when I am given 9 things to do by tomorrow. And if I can't say no, or I haven't learned how to say no or negotiate, she's going to feel that I'm unreliable because she can do all those 9 things by tomorrow and I can't yet.
Right.
And so then it goes into how are we able to firmly yet kindly state our boundaries and our challenges and limitations. Of course, it needs to be reasonable. And then negotiate what we are able to do to manage expectations proactively and what we are not able to do and why.
Yeah, to say gently, I think I got this. Maybe give me some space to do it myself. Mm. It goes both ways, right? So you also need to be able to communicate to your boss without pissing them off.
So it also goes to us demonstrating that credibility, right? Mm. In the first or second time.
Yeah, I think trust has to be earned, right? Yeah. Yeah. So if you're good at what you do, and I think they can slowly pull back and not to be so controlling. But there are some people, no matter how good you are, that's just their nature. They want to check off everything on the list, even though it's a waste of their time. Okay, so here's another one. This one made me laugh. Managers who walk around like they are modeling, acting busy, and using eye power. I laughed at eye power because that's such a Singapore thing. I guess what this person is trying to say is that we've all come across managers who are not really in the trenches. So in a way, they are the opposite of micromanagers. They are non-managers.
Yes. They'll point fingers.
Yes.
Tell you to do this, do that. Then they go back to their air-conditioned corner office and have coffee.
Yeah. But the staff is working 16-hour days, etc. And this guy is checked out. Okay, so working alongside your staff, obviously, you don't have to do all the trench work, but how important is this factor in a good manager?
I think first and foremost, it's about recognizing the sort of behaviors that would have a negative impact on employees and the company, whether not being in the trenches would actually hold the team back and result in low functioning teams.
Okay.
And I think the routine half a yearly employee survey would probably show some results there. To what extent does the leader need to be more involved?
So being involved is quite important.
I would say it's important to have the awareness and empathy of what people are actually going through rather than pointing fingers when you do not truly know the challenges that they are facing.
Okay, so I give you a scenario. So you have a project, big client, $1 million deal. Everybody is burning the midnight oil, staying till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning to get this done. Should the manager stay with them and help them out with the outcomes?
I think even if the manager don't know how to do anything, just by being there, it actually show a positive signal to the team that I'm with you in the trenches, even though I'm sitting at this corner. So I do think there is a positive effect of being there.
If the manager took care of little things like ensuring that they had their meals at dinner time, like going out to buy or just order in, to take care of the welfare of the people who are doing the work, to show that care, to show that sincerity, that would be a great motivator. People say that good bosses are worth, quote unquote, dying for. And if you have a great boss who demonstrates that they look out for you, that they care for your welfare, you would be willing to go the extra mile, even if it meant that you needed to work until 2, 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You would do so a lot more willingly.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The results would speak for itself. And of course, maybe after that, declare 2 days off for working late.
Yeah.
That would be a great motivator as well.
Some kind of a reward, right?
Yeah,
all the hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about showing that I see you and the work that you're putting in. I appreciate you. You are not being taken for granted.
Now, sometimes it could also be a clash of personalities rather than just a lack of competence or skill.
Mm-hmm.
How are you able to objectively tell the difference between a manager who is just not a good fit for you versus a manager who is just cannot make it?
It's bad at his job.
Yeah, man. Objectively bad at their job.
Have you had a manager who's bad at their job? Okay, maybe bad is too drastic.
I've had a manager who delegated his work to me on top of my work.
Oh.
So it's not that he was incompetent per se. It was that he was too busy to do his work because there were other fires that he needed to fight.
I see.
So he tai chi everything to you, lah.
And a few other roles as well at the same pay.
Ooh, so you were overloaded.
Yes. Yes, and that was a role that induced a lot of anxiety. So I would say I wasn't able to articulate my boundaries because I held the narrative that I needed to stay on and fight on.
How old were you? Were you young?
No, this is like late 20s. But I felt like I didn't want to quit so easily.
Yes.
That was my narrative.
So
I just willingly took everything that was being thrown at me and I tried my best to...
Not drown.
Exactly. So after I finally stepped out of that role, it was like a breath of fresh air.
Right.
And I was so grateful. I was out of the anxiety.
Mm.
And retrospectively, I wish that maybe I could have put a stop to it sooner. Or maybe it happened exactly as it needed to and I learned whatever I needed in that experience. But for sure, after that, it enabled me to firstly recognize my value and secondly, to be able to articulate what I can bring to the table. And thirdly, to not tolerate a manager who creates that environment of anxiety for me anymore.
Right. Okay. I think people who are bad at their jobs don't last very long. The system takes care of them.
True.
I feel.
Or unless they successfully manage to remove their manager.
Wow. So Game of Thrones. So my experience is very mild in the sense that, for example, if this person suggests a proposal, but the proposal is not strong, I can see that it is not strong. And the team can come up with a kind of a better proposal and the outcomes are clearer, etc., etc. So there's this conundrum, right? How do you tell the boss that
your proposal cannot make it?
That's tough, right?
And I would start by asking questions. And I love to tell the people that I coach, good questions are better than smart answers. So I would first maybe test the waters a little bit to go, hey, boss, that's a great proposal. Thank you for coming up with it. Would you be open to some other suggestions?
Okay.
Yes, no. No, I think we're good. Okay. But can I still share something I would like to add to make it 110% and share a little bit of suggestions and see how well it is received or not.
Okay.
And from there, we can kind of figure out how many more ideas we can kind of squeeze in and tailor the shape of the proposal.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's about aligning what we want with the boss, that we want the best outcome for this proposal.
Yeah.
We're on the same team.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just, if it can live with it, you just live with it. Because the power distance is so high, right?
Yes. They do determine your fate. They do determine your performance.
Exactly.
They do determine your neck.
This is my final question for you. I feel that the biggest challenge in dealing with a manager who is not great, this person decides your ranking, your assessment, your promotion, your bonuses, etc. And if you like your job, but you really cannot take your manager, what would be the first thing you would do? Would you A, say, okay, we need to talk? Or would you B, go to someone above this person?
Can I answer first?
Yes.
Send their resume to Headhunter. Okay, I'll do this, continue.
What do you think?
I would have a chat with HR and ask that it is 100% confidential. And I have done that before.
Ooh, that's a good tip.
Yeah. To figure out what are my options, I do not think it is the best idea to do a skip level.
Okay.
Because that would betray the trust
right.
that you are trying to build with your manager.
Yeah. So you basically will cut the bridge if you do that.
A lot of people would just start looking for a role and quiet quit.
Or loud quit.
Or loud quit. And it's whether we have the courage to, cliche as it sounds, be the change that we want to see, to articulate what's not working in this relationship, and hopefully to share a little bit of feedback that they are a little bit more self-aware even after we've left than they were, that they can be a better manager to the next person. And there's this story that I love from a friend. He worked with a supervisor that wasn't the best of supervisors, a bit of micromanaging, insecure. And it's because this supervisor just never had a good role model. And finally, a good boss comes along, shifts him out from under that supervisor to another team, firstly.
Okay.
Now they are friends because, firstly, they're not working together, but also that good boss took the time to coach this supervisor, and this supervisor's transformed.
Yeah.
So it's really about recognizing, has that micromanaging or bad boss ever really had a good boss? Because they can't give something that they've never had.
Okay.
They can't give something that they've never received.
Yes, that's a good point.
And then what can we do about it? How can we influence the situation? And I think it's really important to take a responsible mindset rather than a victim mindset. Because if we take the victim mindset that I have a bad boss, this person should be like that, but is like that, we would just be drinking poison. But if we take a responsible mindset, what can I do? What can I request of this manager? And are they open to change or not? And if I've tried three times, maybe it's really time to just take a 2-month sabbatical and go for a holiday, look for
a job. I mean, if you are talented, that shouldn't be a problem, right? Yeah. The only difficulty comes when you like the job very much.
And the people around.
But I like the HR idea because at least you have almost like a secret counsel to tell you, am I even seeing this right? Do all these instances point to this person being just a bad manager?
Are there other people who have experienced something similar to me? Or am I the
patterns,
only one?
Yeah, are there patterns that I'm seeing? Is this okay? And then objectively, that person who is trained in that can say, you know what? You're right. Okay, these are some red lines. Yelling, for example. Taking credit. Throwing you under the bus when things don't go right. These kinds of toxic bad behavior needs to be called out.
Yeah. Or even speaking to someone who's a peer to your supervisor in confidence to ask, what's the working style of that person?
Yeah.
How can I learn to better manage this?
That's also
manager?
Very valuable.
So Gallup, which is a workplace consulting and global research agency, actually found in their research that 55% of employees have left a job to get away from a manager. 55%, that's really crazy. So I think it really underscores the significant impact that managers have on their employees. For those people who are looking into a new job, maybe you want to spend a bit more effort and time doing reference check on your future boss.
Go to LinkedIn. How do you do a reference check?
Go to LinkedIn and see who they managed before, how long they stayed in that job, because all these are going to give you some indication. And of course, during your interview, maybe you want to ask the company, does the company have 360 feedback? Does the company actually have a structured managerial training? Because all these, again, are green flags that you can take into consideration.
Sometimes the bosses that I deal with don't align, obviously, with my values and how I do things and how I see things. But I kind of work around it. I do what I think is best and accept that there are some flaws. Mm-hmm.
Because, no one's perfect.
Yeah, because it's really impossible to get someone who ticks all the boxes. Mm. I mean, if we could do that, we'll all be very happy, right, Adrian?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not the case. Okay. Then as me as a manager, over the last few years, I've come to realize, as you said, what matters to me? Mm. What are my triggers? Mm. And you're right. I feel that I need to articulate this to every new person who comes in. So I'll say, for example, that the quality of work matters to me greatly.
Yeah.
I don't care that you take a 3-hour lunch or I don't need to care about what you're doing on your personal time. Mm-hmm. But when the work comes to me, it has to meet certain expectations. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's fair, but that's who I am.
Yeah.
And so we work around that. It's always a communication issue.
Yeah.
It all boils down to being able to communicate it. But the bottom line is, I think there are red lines in people who are managing you. Mm. And you need to be able to identify them and see if you can put up with it. Like you say, it's not worth your anxiety, right?
It's not. It's not. Another tip is, if you feel like there is bullying,
yeah, exactly, you might harassment,
you might want to consider recording that conversation on your phone. So at least you have evidence.
Yeah.
If you need to bring it to HR.
I think this is not going to be an issue for the young generation. They record every damn thing. Yeah. So managers cannot get away with what they used to get away with, like in our time. So thanks everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. It's been such a pleasure to read all your comments. So keep them coming. Thank you, Audrey, for spending some time with us to unpack this very interesting topic. And thank you to the CNA podcast team. Okay, I was going to say that you should ask them if I'm a good manager, but I shan't. Till we meet next week, have a good work week.